Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Cobiello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to mitigate crises and help teams get back on track. This podcast is about helping the C-suite leader to navigate challenges with confidence. For today's leader, I'm here to help you get back on track. Tomorrow's leader, let me partner with you to learn the secrets of the C-suite. Wherever you're at in your career, this is the podcast for you. Hello, I am Deb Cobiello, the Drop-In CEO, and I am so grateful you've joined us on another episode of the podcast where week after week, I get to speak to amazing, amazing leaders who share their insights with you. And most of all, I hope that they inspire you. And if you like this episode, as always, we'd love you to download, subscribe, rate, review, and tell others about this amazing resource. And at the heart of it all, and my guest as well is of the same genre, all I want to do is help C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow to navigate challenges with confidence. And today, it is my honor to welcome back onto the show Germaine Saint-Denis, who is an advocate for caring leadership, a style that he embodies and promotes through his extensive experience as a middle manager and executive in IT consulting services. And his professional journey, marked by resilience and adaptability, emphasizes the importance of nurturing and empowering individuals to build high-performing teams. And he has been awarded for his outstanding achievements and having navigated significant industry challenges, including the aftermath of 9/11 and 3 acquisitions. Germaine's leadership approach is deeply rooted in trust, empowerment, and people-first strategies. And his bio is extensive, but I don't want to take any more of his thunder. Germaine, welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast.
Thank you very much, Deb. It's a real pleasure and honor to be back, because it's actually my third time on your podcast. So I feel very privileged, and we may make other people jealous. I'm sorry about that.
You know, when you create so much value, I just want to bring it back to my audience, because you and I are so aligned in what it takes to really, really evolve leadership, because that is what leaves a lasting legacy for those that work for us, as well as the customers that use our services. But I will start by a quote from your book, and we're going to go deep into his book, Empowering People Through Caring Leadership, that has just been published. One of the things I thought was most impactful in his book, and again, a quote from himself, is, "Success as a leader requires effort. Get to know your team as people first, understand their potential as professionals, then trust and empower them to get the job done." An amazing quote. So I wanted to highlight you. He has just written a book. And again, it is so important to be bringing your thought leadership forward. He was a tremendous advocate for my first book, The CEO's Compass, Your Guide to Get Back on Track. I actually quoted him in my book. Again, he is a profound thought leader, but you've written a book. And so many people out there as leaders have thoughts, but they never really get them out there. And I was just curious, as you moved along this journey, did you have help from other resources or coaches to put this piece of work out into the world?
Actually, I did have quite a bit of help. It's kind of been brewing in my mind for a while. And I had all of this information in my head, and I still do. And I started to jot down what could be the key topics of my book, and a book that would not be just like every other leadership book, but something that would talk about my journey that people could relate to. And when I started to do that, then it became fairly clear that I was able to develop an outline. But I knew that to make the book better, it couldn't just be my journey, because my journey involves other people, obviously. So at the same time, just as I was starting, I went out to a number of people and asked them if they would provide me insights on what is a good leader to them, and also what is a coaching leader, which I have a whole paragraph, a whole chapter on leaders as coaches. And then how did they deal with issues? So when I wrote my book, in various places, I thought, oh, this is where I'm going to put so-and-so's insights, because this will really apply. And people who read my book now come back and tell me, this is so cool the way it works, because it's added value. It's not just my perspective, which is a valid perspective and great experience, but also augmented, the value is augmented by having other people's journey or parts of their insights in there, right? So from that point of view, I had tremendous help. I have help from some very, very key individuals, namely Peter Gorrell, who you know. He's a social media strategist and he's got great ideas. And Patrick McKenna, who's a connection of mine out in Edmonton, they've helped me a lot, frankly.
You know, what I love that you talked about is, again, as you shared your content with the world, shared your thoughts with the world, you got people's feedback. And sometimes we don't notice that feedback, but people that truly care about us and the work that we're doing will say these positive things and even quote quotes that are quotable. And I suggest to anybody out there, again, as you start putting your own thought leadership out there, whether it's a new PowerPoint, a new initiative, a white paper, and people comment on that, we need to first of all save that positive affirming feedback for those days that we have we don't feel so good about ourselves. It's always good to pull those out, but to build credibility, just like Germaine has said, is that we need to also show that our advocates also agree to make this content relative. So don't forget those people that give you compliments and testimonials.
I was actually blown away by the how people were willing and eager to contribute when I went out and asked for some insights, right? And then when I went and asked for endorsements, I sent my book to a number of people for an early read. And the endorsements that came back just blew me away. And I knew they were sincere, because nobody wants fake endorsements or reviews. I knew they were sincere, but it was actually touching. And in many cases, reading them, it just hit me. Yeah.
You know, and when I think about this again, I know, and I've interviewed a lot of CEOs or service providers such as yourself, and we do need to elevate our voices. So again, I promote to anybody, if you have unique thoughts, start putting your content out on your website or a blog post on social media. Think about writing a book. Anybody can write a book. It's a process. It is hard at times, but if you have the right people with you, it can actually be an amazing journey. But for you, again, before we get into the details of your book, because I want people to understand, what did you enjoy most, or what was most challenging about writing your book?
I did enjoy it a lot because, as I said, I had all these ideas, but to put them down in some kind of structure and arrangement that would make any sense to anybody else, or to me even to write them, that was a struggle. That's how I developed the outline. And my wife helped me with that a lot. Actually, my wife is a professional in that area, and she's a book editor and narrator. So she helped me a lot to structure the outline the way it should be done. Afterwards, it just, once I got going, I just started to like it more than I thought I would. I started to like it because I said, these stories will resonate with people. That's always what came to mind. So as I write, it's not a book to be read and put on the shelf. And we may come back to that, but it's meant to be a guide, a workbook. So as I write, I put in actual experiences, real life experiences. Say, if I'm talking about this kind of leader, for example, I say, well, by the way, this is what happened to me. This is what I had to do. I was asked to do this, or I had to do this because of an issue that I had with someone on the team or a difficult client or whatever. So people appreciate that that's actually sewn in there, which I think makes it even more valuable.
Mm. And so honestly, anybody has a story to tell. Put your thoughts out there, but also bring in your own vulnerabilities, your successes, your failures. It is, I don't know, liberating, because I too, again, writing my book, it was liberating to be able to put my thoughts out in the world, share those stories, both positive and negative, because honestly, we all are humans. We've had these successes and failures. And if you can connect with one individual that has similar successes or failures, that's one more human that we're able to connect with and maybe make a difference. But now what I want to do is really showcase your work, because you're the architect of people first, and I love that brand message that you have, but you really focus on caring leadership. And I really want to understand, you know, the hallmark of caring leadership. What makes it different? What is distinguishable? So people understand what you're trying to drive home with this.
Yeah, and that is really, really the essence of my book. I considered actually entitling my book The Architect of People First, but it didn't mean anything to people. That's kind of the feedback that I got. So then we changed it. And this is the third kind of iteration, if you will, but we didn't use Architect of People First in the title, but the principles behind it are that whatever you do, start with people in mind, right? So the hallmark of caring leadership and the approach as a architect of people first is, first of all, you have to care for your people. You know, you have to care for their people and their well-being if you want them to be successful. Nobody's going to be that great if they're struggling, either with some health issues, struggling at home, whatever. So you need to care for them as an individual and for their well-being. Empowering people through caring leadership ended up being the best title, because that's really what it's all about. Caring leadership empowers people. So in the subtitle, strategies that actually work, and they actually work because they're strategies that I used. So this is not like a textbook kind of thing. This is a real workbook based on practical information.
You know, what you talk about, caring for your people first before the work at hand, so many leaders skip that because they're brought in, they have to solve a particular issue, a crisis, get particular results, and they're so focused on that. But even in my book, we talk about the past and the pride of the people. We have to first get to know the people, dedicate and allocate time to get to know them, and then it's an ongoing basis because people are here to perform at their best. And we need to pick up on those signals when people may not be at their best. What do they technically need to be successful? What barriers we need to break down? And if we have a trusting relationship, ask deeper questions about how are they? How are they feeling? Without violating privacy, there are ways we can do that. But the mere fact that if you care, you will bring out the best in those people.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. Just the fact that you care can change everything. Even in difficult situations, if you show that you care and you want to help them deal with a struggle or some conflict, show that you care and it helps. I mean, we're all human beings and we're largely driven by emotion, right? I think we have to realize that.
So I'd love an example where maybe you came into an organization and recognized the landscape for which you needed to apply this approach. What was it like when you first got into the situation? Where were people and, I don't know, the performance there afterwards? And if not yourself, maybe somebody you have coached, because I know you coach others, how were you able to help them really lead with caring for people first?
Thank you. I do coach others, and we can talk about that. There's several examples that I can use, but when I worked at BEA Systems, and we were not sure if it's okay, I think it's okay to mention company names.
Yeah.
We were acquired by Oracle. So we went from being a mid-sized to almost small tech companies, very nimble at BEA, and the whole Canadian leadership team was here in Toronto. We met every day. In the office, most of the salespeople came in. It was a really, really well-integrated organization. Then overnight, all of that changes, and the leadership is in the U.S. Some people didn't make the transition. And all of a sudden, my team were kind of a little bit confused as to, you know, how do we go about the. Everything was so different, and the kind of direction we got was largely through long emails and broad conference calls with everybody, which they weren't really used to. So that was challenging. And so I decided to help them by kind of not necessarily hiding, but kind of being a buffer between, I knew what we had to do in the new organization, translate that into what the team needed to know and how they should approach it. Although I had struggles for a while and a few battles, I did end up with a lot of respect afterwards and very good relationships. It worked. And a bit later, not that I want to make this too long, but there was an organization change. And suddenly my boss called me one morning and she said, well, okay, you have now 22 more people are joining your group. So-and-so is not here anymore. Oh, okay. Only knew a few of them by name, to be honest. So I contacted each one by one. number one, to show that, hey, I know you're there. We'll get to know each other after a while, but at least just to say hello. And I discovered shortly after, there were some real hidden gems that nobody seemed to be aware of. And in no time, within about a year, was a whole very, very different kind of level of group and performance. It was really, really worthwhile. Yeah.
You sing to my heart because, again, as leaders, we are rewarded for results. We're not necessarily rewarded for taking our time to get to know the people. Again, that speaks to my compass point of pride. People have pride. They have certain intellectual property. We may or may not leverage that now. But unless we take the time to get to know them on a deeper level, we'll never, one, get their trust. And two, there may be skills in there that we can draw upon, if not now, in the future. It's almost like, and I'll draw upon kind of my quality improvement methodology, plan, do, check, act, PDCA. Teams so often race to start doing when they should be spending more time in the planning. Who are the resources? Who are the team members? Do we have everything we need to succeed? And only then, and this might resonate with you, set the date for project completion based on the resources, the capability, and the time needed to do it right versus focusing on an arbitrary result and a date. Kudos to you. More people need to hear your message about take time to care and get to know about the people.
Thank you. Yeah, I forget which president. I think it might have been Abraham Lincoln who said that if I have 4 hours to chop down a tree, I'm going to take the first 3 hours sharpening the axe, right? Makes so much sense.
It absolutely does. But the book is so valuable, as you said, as a guide for people that want to understand about caring leadership. But I do want to go back to your brand because that is Germaine Saint-Denis, is you are the architect of People First. It is your brand. It is your strategy. And I would love for you to just take an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about that because that'll get us to know you a little bit more about your thought leadership, the value that you can bring in addition to your resource, your book that you've just written. So tell us more about being the architect of People First.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's actually more than a slogan. Architect of People First and Caring Leadership or People First, they're more than slogans. They're mindsets. That's how you have to look at them. They're mindsets. So Architect of People First means, I started using that actually when I was talking about and dealing with major changes, transformation due to new technology or innovation or business transformation. Putting people first made a big, big difference. So architect of people first means that whatever you're doing, always start with the people in mind. And I started, actually I only started yesterday, but I have a recorded series with Michael Leckie from the US. And he has a whole strategy, philosophy, and a book around digital transformation. But he puts people first, right? And that's why he's so successful and he advises C-level executives in large companies about how to do that. It's a mindset. It's not like, you know, we want this done. Here's what we need. Get it done and let us know when you're finished kind of thing. It just doesn't work that way. So the idea of having architect in mind, is architect is somebody who will design something. We think about architects for skyscrapers in the cities or very nice bridges or something like that, which is very true. But the same has to apply. What is it you're trying to do and who is it for? So buildings and cities and the streets design everything else. They're meant to make people's lives better. So if you're going to come up with some strategy as an executive, think about the people who are going to be using it. Think about how it's going to impact them. And we know from all of the business transformations, many, if not most of the large initiatives that fail because they don't involve the people who are going to be impacted later on. And if you involve those people early on, up front, not only will they be more cooperative, they will help you develop a better solution. And in the end, everything will be better. So it's a kind of thinking. Put people first. It's a mindset, right? Put people first. It's not magic, but it's just an adjustment, if you will, right?
but it's easy to miss. And you reminded me of a particular workshop I was going through about 6-7 years ago, and it was around customer journeys, customer touch points, and how to make sure the customer experience was positive. Again, something that top leaders should go through. But the interesting thing was, as we were going through this exercise and mapping out not only the external interactions with our company and our customers, but also the internal interactions with the people within performing the transactions that ultimately interface with your customers. And one of the big aha moments we had was that when people are struggling, they're not communicating with their peers or between the silos, and we didn't set the people up for success, set certain expectations, or improve their processes, we said no amount of trying to improve the customer experience is going to work unless we focus on the interactions of our own people, our own internal customers, to be able to get the maximum performance. Because if they're not communicating, your customers are going to feel delays, poor quality, et cetera. So again, architect of people first. Who are you serving? It's not just your external customers, but it's your internal customers. Very important.
Yeah, exactly right. And if you think about it yourself, and when you go somewhere and you get, you want to acquire a service or buy a product from a company, if the person you're dealing with is obviously miserable and don't like their job, you can tell, right? And you say, well, gee, why would I deal with this person? It may be the product or the service you want, but it does have an impact. On the other hand, if your people are taken care of, they know that leaders are behind them, they're trained, they're equipped, and leaders trust them to do their job, and they care for their well-being, employees will be happier. They'll be happy to serve that client, to help that client. And it makes a whole different customer experience, employee experience and customer experience at the same time.
You know, and this also reminds me, I used to work with a VP of operations, and I could never get them to get their assignments done, their tasks done. You know, they wouldn't get a procedure done. They weren't giving me the KPIs that I needed. And I got very frustrated, and I would find all different ways to meet with them, et cetera. And there was always a reason, but it was more about, I've been focusing on making sure the people have the right training and the support that they need. It is all about the people first. And I would say 10, 11 years ago, I was still in a mindset, I've got to get this transaction done. I've got to get this initiative done. It was all about the day and driving, which some professionals are celebrated for. But now I look at things completely differently. Get the people what they need. Slow it down, because ultimately you'll be able to speed up.
Yeah, well, exactly. And we can't forget that things do need to get done. And there's a bit of a misconception or misunderstanding that, caring leaders are soft, or servant leaders are soft, and you don't have to really push yourself because they'll give you more time. That's not the case at all. And I can tell you, anybody who's worked with me for the past years, I have pretty high standards at the time, and I still do. And I like things to be done well and on time. But I also don't like to start with something sloppy, quick and dirty, because in the end, it just makes things more difficult. So it's much better to start on a solid footing. If everybody knows what their role is on a project and also what their contribution is to a company's goals, that's really, really important. If you frame people's responsibilities and assignment that way, here's your job, and this is what it means to the company. So, and if you take, for example, automobile manufacturing, the person who installs wheels, and Johnny Cash has this song, installing wheels on Cadillacs. So if you're installing wheels on Cadillacs, you're not just installing wheels on a car. You're building a car for someone or a dealer who's asked for a very, very specific features and color and this and that. And really, you're part of something much bigger.
Yes.
So get everybody to understand what part that they contribute and the importance of them doing their job and doing it well and at the right time, at the right quality level. And I think it really helps. People they're not stupid. They know that if you appreciate what they do and you tell them, I appreciate you do this because it makes us better as a company, then it's a win-win.
And things eventually will speed up, go faster, and be of much better quality. People will raise their hand and identify risks, and you can mitigate them sooner. It is just good business investing the time.
I wanted to take a moment to remind you that a recent study showed nearly 60% of leaders feel depleted at the end of the day. And this feeling is a key indicator of burnout and makes it difficult to lead and inspire others. If you've ever experienced that restless exhaustion, you know why CEOs are amongst the most likely candidates for experiencing job frustration. I wrote The CEO's Compass, your guide to get back on track, to confront those feelings and create a plan that is sustainable for you and your organization. I created a 7-point assessment that will help you figure out your problems in days, not months. And it includes so many resources, worksheets, videos, and much, much more. If this is you, please head over to my website, dropinceo.com, and click on my products, The CEO's Compass, and order yours on Amazon or other outlets. And now, back to the conversation.
But your book, as you said earlier, was meant to be a guide, a very easy read, drawing on personal experiences. But you also offer ways for people to work with you, because honestly, I want my audience, when they're done, to say, hey, I love that interview with Deb and Jermaine. But honestly, we need to take this a step further, far beyond this podcast, far beyond getting Jermaine's book. How can people potentially work with you to leverage the insights of your book? What does it look like to work with you?
Yeah, thank you. So I do offer one-on-one coaching about career development in general, but mostly about leadership development. But I go beyond that, and I offer peer group, roundtable leadership development. And the whole idea is to help leaders become better, learn from each other, learn from me possibly, but as a coach, I mostly ask questions, which is what you're supposed to do. But what we do is, this program is fairly simple. You sign up for a period of time, and leadership development takes time. So it's not a matter of weeks. It's a matter of several months or typically a year. But we have once a month, we have a meeting, and I keep the group small, 5 or 6 people, always the same 5 or 6 people. So you get to know them. First thing we do every time is an icebreaker or a warm-up. And it might be, well, how was your weekend? Or, you know, how did your son do it in the hockey tournament or the baseball tournament? Those kinds of things. Or it could be, for example, if you had an undo or redo button, what would be the first thing you would do with it? And you should think about that, Deb, because we're going to come back at the end and answer that question. So I always start with that because it's really good to get the discussion going, and it creates some energy and some synergy. But then we go around and ask each person, what is working for you this month? And what challenges are you having? And what's working for you may therefore be beneficial for the others. What's challenging, maybe someone else has run into that and maybe can offer some suggestions or ask some questions to get you to think about things a little bit differently. So it's a whole way to elevate your leadership through others. And it's meant for middle managers, let's say manager to vice president in large, large companies, or all managers, including C-levels in mid-market or small to business firms. And it's a lot of fun. Some of the meetings are very, very energized and a lot of fun. And we actually, some of us become friends afterwards, which is really, really great.
And again, it's about you caring and giving back and supporting leaders of today and tomorrow. So I so love your work. And we could go on and on. I want, first of all, anybody out there that's listening, and thank you for listening to the show, I do want you to check out Jermaine Saint-Denis, check out his LinkedIn profile, also get his book, Empowering People Through Caring Leadership. Again, it is a must. It's a very easy read. It is a guide. But follow up with him as well. But before we bring it to a close, I want to give you the floor one last time for any last thoughts for our listeners out there, because again, I want people definitely to connect with you.
I will actually go back to a word you used at the beginning, Deb. All the leaders who want to lead and who are good at it, hopefully, or at least make an effort to become good at it, keep in mind that it's the people that make an organization. It's the people that make an organization successful. So whatever you do as a leader in your leadership role, think about your legacy. What legacy are you going to leave behind? What will people say when you're not there anymore? Or it doesn't mean you're, I don't mean that you passed away. What will people say when you leave the organization or when they leave the organization? In fact, last night I had dinner with three of my former colleagues who I started working 15 years ago, something like that. But we had dinner and I gave them a copy of my book. And that's where the legacy comes in. They started talking about, oh, I remember this time and I remember that one. So my legacy is what I put in my book. And that's a leadership challenge for everybody else. My legacy is that I hope that I help people be their best. That would be fabulous.
And that's amazing. And I think everybody listening should think about what legacy, based on your current performance, are you leaving with people for people to remember you by? Because it's the stories that they'll say about you and the fond memories. Again, we're on this world a certain amount of time to connect with humanity and make a real input. Germaine, it's been an absolute delight to have you on the show. Thank you so much for dropping in. And to my listeners, please check out his work. He's a great human. He is very generous. He's been a great advocate for my work. And maybe he can be an advocate for you as well, so you leave your legacy. So Germaine, thank you so much for being an amazing guest.
Thank you very much, Deb, once again. It's a pleasure, and I wish all the best, continued success in your work as well.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. If you found this valuable, please share this show with at least one friend who will find it useful and inspiring. When you share this podcast, it allows me to continue to help C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow to navigate their challenges with confidence. To connect with me or learn more about the Drop-In CEO services, go to my website at dropinceo.com. And until we meet, I wish you well and much success.